Stephen Trimble.
Thank you all for staying to the end. On September 8th, my wife's mother died. She died at 84 in Boston. She had a stroke and died quickly and painlessly. On September 9th, we all flew in from across the country, from Florida and California and New York and Utah, and we all gathered from around New England to mourn together, to share emotions that we don't always let out. It was a tender and vulnerable time. And on September 10th, we buried Grandma B and gave her a rousing round of well-spoken eulogies and praised her long and vital life. And then, like all Jewish families, we went back to her house and everybody gathered. There was way too much food and obscure cousins telling stories we had never heard. And that was September 10th. And at the end of that night, my wife and I slept in Grandma B's bed, which was a really wonderful connection, a tender connection to this woman that we loved. The generations all bumped up a notch. We now were at the head of the line. Well, that was September 10th. Today is September 10th, right? And we expected the next morning to wake up and begin to heal. The next morning, on September 11th, this was 21 years ago, September 11th, 2001 was the next morning. And instead of waking up to a week of healing, we woke up to a phone call from our cousin Andrew, who said, "Turn on the television." And we found ourselves right in the middle of the story of the day that we now call 9/11. The hijackers stayed at a motel only a 10-minute drive from B's house. Those planes were filled with people from Boston. And as the Jewish community there in our suburban Boston neighborhood came by, our family and friends to sit with us to repeat the mourner's Kaddish prayer all week, they would then go on to other homes where those families had lost people in the planes. When we would run out of bagels and have to go out and resupply, we would wear these little traditional pins that the rabbi gives you. In the old days, Jews would actually rend their clothes when they were in mourning. But now you wear a pin with a piece of torn black ribbon. And people would come up to us and say with great compassion, "We're so sorry for your loss," but they thought we had lost people in those planes at the World Trade Center. At the end of the week, we were able to snag one of the first reservations out of the airport. We were desperate to come home to Utah. And we rode the van in from the rental car lot into Logan Airport, and I found myself absolutely overcome. I was beside myself. My heart raced. I was short of breath. I clutched tight to my wife. It was really eerie. It was stark. The airport was empty. It was hollowed out. I wasn't afraid of flying so much, but it was such a strange thing to be there in this place that had always been a place of joy, coming into Boston to visit family and then flying back out again to come home after a good visit. And on this day, it felt like I was going right into a place filled with chaos and threat and death. But I made it. I made it out to the gate, and I sat down, and I began to calm down a little bit and began to look through the window, just looking out to see what was going on out there. And it was a landscape of glass and aluminum and metal and concrete, very much the same materials I've been seeing in that news feed from the World Trade Center, all twisted and torn all week. But the sun began to go down, and I kept waiting for that light over the jetway to change from on time to now boarding. And then all of a sudden, there was a flutter up against that window, and another flutter and another. And then they would dart away, and there was a stream of these fluttering butterflies streaming along the plane and rising up over the cockpit. Midnight black, tropical orange, flashes of color. I realized it was the monarchs, my God, It's the monarch butterfly migration, flying right along this plane, blessing the plane, really, reassuring me, bringing me back. And I looked at those butterflies, and I just could barely believe what I was seeing, and began to think about what they were up to. They were migrating back to Mexico. You know, the monarchs come up, it takes five generations to come from Mexico all the way to Canada, and then they turn around and a new generation flies back to a place they've never been. And that migration is a tradition too. It's a tradition driven by instinct. But I think they're passing on that tradition generation to generation, even if it is by instinct. And the monarchs make it back to the mountains in central Mexico every year, where the indigenous people believe that they carry with them the souls of dead warriors or the spirits of dead children. This year, those monarchs carried the soul of my mother-in-law and the souls of all those people lost in the plains. And as I watched for that last little bit of time before I walked down the jetway, I began to repeat the name of those monarchs in Spanish, that beautiful name, Mariposa. Mariposas, mariposas. It was a chant. It reminded me of the rhythm, the chant of the mourner's cottage prayer that we'd been saying all week. And now I was saying my own little chant to reassure myself about our connections back to the way things had always been. Mariposas, mariposas. All I could do was wish those butterflies well, wish the mariposas well, wish all of us well as we begin our flight over thousands of miles of the continent. Safe travels, mariposas. Buen viaje, mariposas. Thank you.